So then, after offering the boga, when you're chanting the, after chanting the mantras with ringing the bell, the guru mantras, then to Gauranga and to Krishna. Then one chants the Gayatri. So then in chanting, one can either chant the first line, the Brahma Gayatri, or chant the sixth line, the Gopal, or the specific Gayatri for the deity. But generally it's best to stick to the Gayatris that one is initiated into, because these can cover all of them. The Gopal mantra can be used for any form, any Vishnu Murti like this, any deity that there is. Because any of the, in the Vishnu Tattva category, then we see that in the, like in the Gaudiya Panjikas, Gaudiya Padatis, then they'll use Kam Bija for the Bij mantra for them. Taking from that point of Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa, like this, that it's Keshava who has taken these forms. So Krishna has taken all these different forms. And so then, because of that, then the Kam Bija is used for their, for the Mula mantras and that. Mula mantras may be outside of what we have as initiation mantras, but we have the Kam Bija, so then that can be used for all of them. Or Om, we've been given Om, so like that, between these two, then we can establish all of the different mantras. Then afterwards, when the time is up, the given time, then we can come, we should make a sound again, mentioned before, knock on the door, ring a bell, clap the hands, something should be done to now that you're going to come. The Lord's expecting you'll come, but just that at when you'll come and that, it's always nice to let that be known. Then coming back in, then we can sit or kneel, and then after the boga, offering them back to their, or after the offering, we wash the hands, mouth, offer water for that, with idam hasta mukha prakshalanam. Then wash their feet, etat padyam. Then achman, idam achmaniyam. Then they go back to their seat on the altar with asanam, idam asanam. And we can offer tambulam, or betel for the deities. So that's a basic function that's doing there. Interesting to note also is the hands, mouth, these are washed first, then the feet are washed. Sometimes I see devotees will wash their feet, then their hands and their mouth like this. Problem is when you're washing the upper in the mouth and the hands, water falls down by the gravitational force like that, where in modern terminology according to the laws of Newton. So then and when we find the water falls down, it falls towards the feet. Unless we are kneeling or, sitting, then they'll fall on our lap or, some other place. But if we're standing when we wash, then the water falls down. And then it doesn't make sense washing the feet first if they're going to again become dirty from water falling from the hands and mouth. So you always wash the hands first so your hands are clean. Because you can't rinse your mouth out with the hands are dirty. It doesn't really make much sense. So the hands are made clean. Then you rinse the mouth. Then after rinsing the hands again, then wash the feet. Like that. And then one is finished. Then there's achman. So now there's two kinds of achman that can be done there. If it's for puja and stuff like that, then that means the achman that you would do sipping water three times. Or if it's a matter of you've gone into some place and you wash hands, mouth and all that, and washing the feet, then one can gargle. That is also one of the kinds of achman. That's generally used after like taking bath, going to the bathroom, then that's achman that's generally used there. When the word achman is used, most of the time it refers to sipping of water from the achman cup. But if it's after bath, specifically, or after going to the bathroom, using the bathroom, then that means washing, gargling. Because it depends upon where one is, but the odors from the air are picked up, and when one breathes, like through the nose, even through the mouth, they dissolve on the tongue. So then one wants to remove those from the mouth, you know, because generally the smells in the bathroom are, you know, soap and, you know, powders and all kinds of disinfectants and, you know, whatever else happens to be in the bathroom. So all these things are not greatly wonderful things that you want to take with you, you know, as a memento for having visited the bathroom. So after cleaning oneself, one generally, the final thing, puts some water in the mouth, gargles that, spits that. But one should always be careful to do that in such a way that not to splatter it all over yourself and have to start the cleaning process all over again.
How is the offering? It used to be a custom in temples that sometimes they would just put a cloth across if the devotees were sitting there and some offering had to be made to the deity. So they would string a cloth across so that the assembled devotees or people walking the temple couldn't per se see the offering. But you could still see the deity. But there seems to be an injunction that one shouldn't look on the Lord while he's taking that that offering. So that's not ideal, that one, the Lord is taking and he's looked on at that time.
Yeah, it's not ideal. But if there's a big crowd or, you know, there's something where the darshan would remain open more, then it can be done. Another aspect you see is that in Jagannath Puri, the Indudumnamar has asked Jagannath that he remain open as much as possible. So I think in Puri they only close 3 hours a day, and the rest of the time they're open, like that for darshan. So what they do there is their bogas, they have it in a special thing that it's down in a like a lower place, a hole. That's what I've heard, I've never seen. So that from the darshan hall you cannot see the boga, but Jagannath can see it, like that. So there's a big room, and then they come in from all places and fill it up, completely filled up this room. Then the offerings are made. But then when they do that, he doesn't close, but they put a thin piece of cloth that goes in front of the deities, in front of their mouths. That's what they do. Stretches right across the altar. So generally, we don't do that. We just put it down. Can't see the boga. But what can be done there in that consideration, which is either the Lord will do it himself, or it can be considered or understood by the pujaris, is that the small deities then will be accepting the offering, and the big deities will be giving the darshan. So one should definitely remove the flute from the small deities' hands like that. So then in that case, then one can do all these things of achman and all these other aspects where you're asking him to sit, you know, asanam, padyam, achmaniyam, all that, then do it for the small deities. Like that. Do it all for the small deities. Invite them, do all those different things like that. Because most people won't notice the small deities. They'll just look at the big deities.
And with Achman Maharaj, when you sip like this from now, any excess water on the hand you could discard like that. What's the nature of that water you discard? Is it considered contaminating? Or is it?
It's not clean. But see, generally is when you're sipping the achman, you're sipping from the Brahmarandra. So you're not actually put your mouth into the palm. The achman mudra, the two that are used, either this one, I'm not sure what the name is, where the little finger is straight, the thumb is straight, and the index, middle, and the ring finger at a 90 degree angle, then it makes it real hard to get your mouth into the hand, unless you are, you know, have a specially designed face or something, or you're an aardvark or something like that, then maybe you could do it. But otherwise, you can't. The other one also, where you do the Gomukh, it's the same, I mean, the, not the Gomukh, the, what is it, Gokarna, where you take the index finger and fold it up into the base of the thumb, and then the middle ring and little finger are bent at a 90 degree angle, you still have the same problem. Maybe if you don't have a nose, maybe you can do it or something. You know, definitely if you were, yeah. So these basically ensure that the only way you're going to get water out of your hand is to sit from the very base, just where the bottom of the hand goes into the wrist. And that generally is, you put the base of the lip there. So you're not, in other words, the lip is not kept in its normal position out, but it's kept flat. It's held back a bit against the teeth. You don't have to curl it inside the mouth, but it's just, it's, you sip like that. Then, so the water that you're washing your hands with there, generally you'll throw behind you. You won't throw to the side. When you're doing the puja, then all the main paraphernalia is kept in front of you. And you generally have water for washing the hands to the side behind you. And then throwing water will generally be more behind than that. So that's generally that I don't think it may come up. We'll see if it comes up here. They get into the Karshuddhi. So Karshuddhi, the water for purifying the hands. See, generally you'll keep simple is you have one Achman cup and you use that for yourself, use that for the paraphernalia. Generally they'll have another one for the deities. If you want to be a little bit more strict, you have one for yourself, another one that's for the paraphernalia and the deities. In other words, that you put the paraphernalia aside with the deities rather than with yourself. Like that. It's generally recommended only sannyasis like that. I'm not sure about brahmacharis, but sannyasis, that they can use one achman cup for everything, because they'll do their own achman. Then they'll upgrade the water for using for the paraphernalia, then they'll upgrade it again for the deities, because they're expected to keep very little paraphernalia. So they won't keep many. But when you're doing a strict house worship, or especially temple worship, it's good to split the two. Like that, between achman cup used by the pujari, and the ones used for the deities. Like that. Or you can also have three. You can have Karshuddhi, which is a bigger pot of water, especially you can wash the hands more nicely. Achman is for purifying, means the hands are clean, and we just put something to purify in a subtle fashion. Karshuddhi generally means more, we're actually cleaning. You know, like you scratch your leg, or you know, you stick your finger in your nose or something like that. Then you want to clean more carefully. That's Karshuddhi. Then after that, then with the Achman, then you'll go back to the puja. Like that. That's being more strict. But at least minimum is that you wash your hands nicely before going to the deity room. Then be very careful not to touch anything that you wish you didn't, and then just use the Achman cup. Like that. That's generally what's going on. What is the utility of a very large Achman cup? Anakadasi means you get more water, especially if you're doing a dry fast. Because Achman is not, is not breaking the fast on when there's fasts. So I heard that when Bhima was told there's five, I can never remember all five, but Achman, Charinamrita, medicine, order of guru, Do you remember the fifth? Similarly, I can never remember the fifth. But those five don't break a fast. What? Maybe it's Tulsi. You know. So someone said that when Bhima heard this, he thought about a large Achman cup. But that may have just been the orators, you know, just throwing it in for some fun. But generally, these large Achman cups are used by people who do a lot of puja and a lot of Achman. Because technically, before starting puja, you're supposed to do two full Achmans. Any major thing, it's two. And if it's minor, then it's one. Like after a bath, or before putting tilak, or like that. But before puja, before yajna, generally before studying the scriptures, like that. Or if you've been to places that aren't very clean, you know, coming back from the bathroom, going through a road where there's a crossroad. Because where there's crossroads, then in the exact middle of the crossroads, then that's the designated place for yakshas and all these kind of personalities. They can hang out. So you'll see in the Vedic road system, when roads come to a cross, there's always a circle in the middle, a roundabout. No one ever goes through that place, because that place is where the yakshas sit. Yakshas and pisachas, you know, any of those, that's their place. So they sometimes have great fun arranging that there's some bewilderment on the part of the drivers so that they collide with each other. So these are, you see, in south, it's in north is practiced, the roundabouts. But then in south, many times they even put a big, like, form of a yaksha or some strange personality there just for them to have fun and hang out in, to remind everybody that that's why we're going around, to avoid such personalities.
Even in the West, that tradition, I think.
Yeah.
The old traditions of,
yeah, roundabouts.
Not sure, the place for witches.
Yeah. Well, that's generally where they like to burn them, and, you know, things.
And
like
in
that.
Voodoo, I think it's Baron Samedi is Lord of the Crossroads. Lord of Death.
Baron Samedi.
Yeah, he's one of the voodoo gods, but that's
his spot at the crossroads.
Lord of the Crossroads.
Yeah, and it's the standard. It all comes down from the Vedas, because at that crossroad, it's considered impure. So generally, when one had crossed one of those, because of them around, then one would do two achmans, like that. So generally, just for that, before a major kind of worship, or after having been in a unclean situation, one does two. And if it's just a simple thing, then one. So if one is following all those things, one can do a lot of achmans in a day. So big achman cups, then you don't have to keep filling it all the time. But now, when you're using big achman cups, naturally you need a big spoon or it gets lost inside. You know, and you don't want to touch the water with your nails. Right? Nails are considered dirty because they pick up all kinds of interesting things. So water should never be, puja water, and that should be never touched with the nails. So you have to have a spoon long enough. So it'll look very funny having a very long spoon with a very small little bowl. And then this monstrous cup. So the spoon is generally also, the bowl of the spoon is quite big also. But now, those in the know don't fill it up and then pour it into their hand so it's running off of all sides and down their arm. And when they pour a drop on their head, they get a bath and all that. That is for a certain kind of enthusiast, but not the traditional enthusiast. So you generally take that spoon and put it into the water. The spoon is vertical. And when you pull it out, it will have only a drop or two of water in the bowl. The bowls are so constructed that they will hold a few drops of water. But that's all. So you put it in vertical, you pull it out vertical, and then you put it into your hand. Because achman is taken, it's supposed to be, if you put one grain of, I think it's urd dal, in your palm. So how much water it takes to cover that. That's how much water is used for sipping achman. And when one sips, then one should try to get it to the heart. So it has to be at least that much. Just not much. It'll go there. If you concentrate, it'll go to the heart. So Brahman is purified by going to the heart. The Kshatriya to the throat, then the Vaishya to the mouth, and the Shudra to the lips. I guess they're not very accustomed to it, so just if they just get their lips wet, they're purified. But the Brahman has to concentrate the most, then when he sips, in thinking about it, you'll find it'll get to the heart that far. If you don't think about it, it won't. So that's the idea. Okay? So that's important, how you use the big achamkai. Otherwise, you can make a tremendous mess on the floor with a large achman cup and a large spoon, you know, if you don't understand that point. Then we offer the prasadam to Srila Prabhupada and to all the Lord's associates. So then we say, we offer prasad to the Guru, to Srila Prabhupada, and to the Lord's associates. Like that, we just show the plate, or show them the plate, and that, and then after, take the plates out, clean the eating area, wash your hands, offer pranams to the spiritual master and the deities. Yeah, okay, so that is very important. That in this is that Prabhupada is included, because as the founder Acharya, he has given us these systems. And it is his systems that we are using, you know, as he has given them. So along with the spiritual master, one has to worship Srila Prabhupada in this. So in the artik, when one's going up, when one's coming down, when one's offering bhoga, then it will always be the spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so that ends the bhoga offering. So any other questions on the bhoga?
The question of tambula.
Yes.
It seems on reading the pastimes, the Lord, on one occasion, he takes in his prakat lila, he takes tambula and then becomes dizzy or unconscious, and there Prabhupada says, devotees don't take. But other places we read, it seems, even in his prakat lila, devotees are offering and he is taking. And of course, as a Supreme Lord, it's natural that he takes. So, could you say something on that? I mean, it's
specifically Lord Chaitanya, so that those rules can apply to him, just like on Ekadasi we don't offer grains to Lord Chaitanya. So one can also on his plate not put tambula. We can check here, I'm not sure if that's how they do the offerings here in Mayapur. The main difficulty is the betel nut and the lime, if it's used. Those are what create any effect. Like that. The leaf itself doesn't. It's medicinal. And most of the spices and that you put in them are also just for digestion and things like that. So there's no problem with that. But the main thing is the betel nut that goes inside the leaf. You'd have to also see what is there in the pastimes that they were offering him. That definitely they would offer him when he was doing Saptaprahara, is it? This 21-hour program. They would be offering there. But other than that pastime, I don't know if they were offering he was accepting.
Sometimes he's in the mood of the Lord. And he would accept sometimes in the mood of a devotee.
Like that. So we worship in that mood of the devotee. That was just on his own, he would sometimes do that, like But that was with those special devotees. Yeah, but it's intimate who they see him like that. Mm. You know, it's like he has come to how you say? He has come in the mood of his devotee to taste that. But that aspect will only be appreciated by those who are following the mood of the gopis. Others appreciate that he's doing that, but to them he's still whatever rasa he is, you know, he's still Krishna, like that. Mm. And so depending upon the devotee, he'll manifest these different, you know, sometimes for fun, sometimes for their desire. Like I think in Vrindavan also, even to the cowherd boy, sometimes I think once he manifested, you know, pastimes of Sridham and himself as Garuda and Vishnu and that, just for the fun of the cowherd boys, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you do something and then someone else says, hey, look at this, and then they do something, and then, you know, Krishna says, well, hey, check this out, and then he takes the form of Vishnu and Sridham takes Garuda, and like that, you know, they have some fun, but it's not taken very seriously, you know, like that. But like Murari Gupta, then he's a worshipper of Ramachandra and like that, so he has that worship of Mahanarayan. He's there, so when he takes the form of Varaha and all that, then, you know, these things are...
You're reading the other day in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Murari Gupta, the Lord is calling Garuda, Garuda, and then he comes and the Lord climbs up on his shoulders, and I was quite amazed because I didn't know what was the relationship between Hanuman and Garuda. Murari Gupta is able to embody somehow both of them.
No, because Hanuman also carries the Lord. Mm-hmm. When he goes, because he had no chariot, so he used to just ride on Hanuman like that, you know. And many times it would be big and he would carry him like that. So that was, I think, Ravana, one of his complaints, you know. It was like, how can I fight with a guy that rides on a monkey, you know? You know, it's like, you know, I expect some... I mean, I thought I was fighting some real Kshatriya, you know, rides on a chariot, you know, all those kind of things, hint, hint, you know. So then I think a chariot was arranged. And then the fight went on. Like that. They're also very, very good friends, Hanuman and Garuda. Like that. Garuda seems to be like the senior of the two in the relationship. And he very much appreciates. I think when Garuda came, when Ram and Lakshman were tied up by those ropes of Varuna or Vasuki, those were very poisonous ropes. So then no one knew what to do. So then Garuda came, and as soon as the snakes saw Garuda, they left. They excused themselves and headed somewhere else as quickly as possible. So when they were coming, then Hanuman was going into ecstasy, just, you know, seeing the form of Garuda and all that. So they're like good friends. Very good friends. Anything else?
You can
consider if you have the guy, but then the point is yeah, you can use it like that, but the thing is one has to use our bija, you know, and like that. That's always best. One can look at it like that. But at the same time, as one finds that within the mantras we have, we can do everything. Like we see that as we go, when we get into it, that for all of our things, when the mantras are done, we always use Gopal mantra. It's always used for the nyasas and things like that. So generally you take what is your main mantra and use that for all your nyasas and different things like that. So the Gopal mantra is used like that for us. So it can be used that way. Or one can use those other mantras. if one wants. There's so many Gayatris are there. One can use that for the specific deity. You understand? It means both are not wrong. You understand that point? It means the Kama Gayatri, it's from that that all other Gayatris expand. So if one has the Kama Gayatri, one has those Gayatris. They're included within it. You know? So one can look at it that way. At the same time as one can look at it that we have mantras that are given by Guru, and with those mantras we can do all the work. So what is the need of going to other mantras? Like that. That is also there. So one can use the Gopal or, you know, Kama Gayatris like that for doing all that worship. If it contains all the others, why do you even have to use them? It's already there in the Gopal and Kama Gayatris. You understand? Like that. Because like Gopal is like the condensed form of the Kama Gayatri. The Kama Gayatri is like the pastimes are manifest. Well, on the Gopal, then it's like more just the mood is manifest. The moods. You know, it's like a touch. But the Kama Gayatri is the pastimes are manifest. So if you have that, why do you need the others? You know? So then one can consider, I have the Kama Gayatri, I can chant all the others. So you can chant any of the others. But you could also consider, I have the Kama Gayatri, why bother with the others? I'll just use the Kama Gayatri and get the same work done. In fact, it's even more pleasing. Like that. So just how you look at it. So both are right. It's not a problem. Then with the Artik ceremony, basically it'll be, you know, same flavor as the making the offering. That before, you know, one will do Achman, and then one will take the blessings of the spiritual master. And then get the attention of the deity by Pushpanjali. Right? One will start to see that in this, that there's a basic system for doing things. One's going to purify oneself, right? One's properly clean and all that. Then one subtly cleans oneself. Achman and whatever, by remembering the Lord. Then one is going to approach the spiritual master to get his blessings, and one is going to get the attention of the Lord, right? And start the worship. Of course, this is after making everything ready, collecting your paraphernalia that you require for doing all these different things, and then setting everything up here. He also mentions here you can make sure that the lamps and all that for the artik are burning. Ideally, there's a lamp that burns in the deity room 24 hours. If not, at least while the deity is awake. If not, then at least during, you know, the artiks, like that. You know, your main puja, your artiks, like that. You know, special darshans and like that. So Krishna Kshetra makes a he mentions here that when you light things, it means this lamp will be used for lighting things. You light your incense, you light your lamps. So one can light the lamps and incense directly from the Stanley lamps. Or he recommends here that many times it's very awkward. Either lamps are too far away for holding them, or by the nature of the, it depends upon the kind of lamp you're using, the kind of wicks you're using, you'll find it easier not to light it straight off of a standing lamp. So he recommends using, one can use incense, a stick of incense to light, but he mentions that you take some thin stick or a piece of kusa grass and wrap it with cotton, and then that can be, you know, and then that's dipped in whatever you're using in your lamps, and then that can be used for lighting. So that's another way to do, and it's a little bit more less messy. But if you have lamps that are such that you can light directly off of, there's no problem. But if it's going to be a difficulty, and lamps are recommended better than candles, you know, because paraffin is not the greatest, you know, nicest substance. But if one can't get lamps, then you can try to get wicks, how you say, made from beeswax. You can try to get beeswax candles like that. But if you use candles, you have to be very careful. That you have to see that however long the candle is, that at least in that much radius or a little bit more, there's nothing flammable. Because if the candle falls over, it should not be able to touch anything in 360 degrees from its stand that could burn. This is a general way. If you want to use candles, keep that in mind. Okay. Then, after taking the offering Pushpanjali, we will, let's see, you know, see that the curtain is closed, open the deity room doors, and then blow the conch shell outside, and then rinse it off and place it in a receptacle, rinse it off into something for that, and then you have the conch and loda, place it back inside, and if you want to use the loda as a stand for the conch, means the loda that you use for washing the conch, that can be done. But then the conch has to be placed in a horizontal position, like that. So you have the mouthpiece on one side and the rest of it on the other. You know, and the round bowl part is sitting on the loda. You know, generally you'd that way place it with the opening up. Not the mouthpiece, but the opening. Now that's important because many devotees like to place it vertically. They will blow the conch, wash it, and then turn it upside down so the mouthpiece is on top of the loda. The unfortunate problem is then the water from inside the conch shell that you've just washed it with falls back into the loda. So technically now the water in the loda is not clean. Like that. Or sometimes devotees like to put it the other way and put the tip of the conch shell in it so it dangles into the water like that. And so it should be placed horizontally. And if that's too much to handle, then it should be placed on another stand, on its own stand, separate from the loda. So like that. One has to understand, you know, one has to be sensitive to these points of cleanliness. Okay, then you wash your hands after blowing the conch, and then open the curtains, like that, while ringing the bell. Now also, an aspect of this, the thing, receptacle for catching the water should be big enough. Ideally, these little Visarjan patras, you know, that come up and they kind of get fat and near the top and then close in. They make those in all different sizes, so you can get them quite large, like we see here in Mayapur. And they have, you know, quite big, you know, about a foot across. So those ones are quite good for catching the water, because the reason, the point of the Visarjan patra that particular shape as it catches the splashes. Because if you have a bowl, then things can splash outside. So, because wherever you splash, it generally goes up and out. And bowls are generally short, so they splash outside. The Visarjanapatra is high, so the splash goes up, but because the sides not being straight, it can't splash off of the sides and still splash out at a 90 degrees from that, like ricocheting off. But as the water splashes out, the curve of the Visarjanapatra means it'll be hitting the wall now at ninety degrees instead of 45, and that will make it just come right back inside the pot. So that is the purpose of that kind of shape on the pots, is to avoid for catching the splash. So make sure that you have one that's big enough that can catch the water very nicely. Then it works. Okay. Seems to be starting to rain. Okay, then when we're doing the artik, all the paraphernalia should have been cleaned nicely. It's pure, but now we're doing subtle purification. This part is yoga. So we see that we're doing yoga, then we're doing ija, offering. Then we're going back to yoga, then ija again. We're going back and forth between these two. So the ija means is that, yeah. So now, once you've touched the, if you haven't touched any paraphernalia, then the hands are clean, and one can use the Achman spoon. So either one can take it with the left hand, put some on the right hand, and then take from the right hand, put it to the left, or the other way. Or you can just pick it up with the right hand, and then by flicking it backwards, by using the wrist, one can flick the water from the spoon onto the hand. One has to make sure when one does that, that the water from the hand then doesn't wash back onto the spoon or fall back into the Achman cup. It should be done in such a way and let the water drip off the back. In other words, the hand is turned out. Then, do the left hand, you take the bell, then put on the other paraphernalia, light it or whatever it is, and then offer it. That can be done. Then, when after offering the paraphernalia, then one will keep that down, ideally not back onto the tray where one's keeping the paraphernalia, because now that is prasad. So it should be kept somewhere else. You know, the incense can go into the incense holder on the altar, taken out of the incense holder used for offering, and that can be put on the floor or in another place. Or sometimes you can, how you say, generally the easiest thing is you have a table, bring the things in a tray, put all the things on the table, leave the tray empty, and put the tray someplace. Then after each item is offered, that can go onto the tray. And then your tray then always has, you know, you can always put things there, rather than take it off the tray and then have to put it back on later. Either way, it doesn't really matter. Or you may be using the steps, so you keep them on one step, put them on a lower step or another place, like that. It depends upon the situation. But ideally is be very careful not to mix the offered items with the unoffered items. Now, when we're now offering the paraphernalia, then we're going to offer this things through the spiritual master. We're only going to be able to offer it to Krishna by going through the spiritual master. So that means taking the blessings. So anything that we have to offer then generally goes the spiritual master, the other members of the parampara. They generally are the ones who are going to do the direct offering. Maybe if they order, we may do. But otherwise, they generally are the ones that are doing all the close, intimate service, and we're helping, assisting them with it. So it's like we'll bring it to them, they'll give it to their predecessor like this until it'll be offered to Krishna. So we're bringing it for their approval, to them to see, to them to accept, and for us to remember that the spiritual master is our means to get to the lotus feet of the Lord. We don't have another means. We don't have another method. Right? So that kind of aspect has to be appreciated. So that is ija. That is yoga. So purifying the paraphernalia, picking it up, showing to the spiritual master, the previous acharya, showing to Lord Chaitanya like this, and then when we get to Krishna, or the main deity, then when we start the offering, at that point, that is ija. Before that, it's all yoga. It's not worship yet. This is very important to understand. Is that the ija, or the actual external worship, starts when you start offering the paraphernalia to the main deity. When you're showing it to the spiritual master going through the parampara, that is not ija, that is not worship, that is yoga. That is part of the subtle preparation to make oneself, prepared, or, qualified to perform the worship. This is very important. It's a subtle thing. It may look the exact same thing, but it's not. So this is what the whole process of Panchratra is for, is to teach us these subtle differences. Because if you can't figure this out, it may be very hard for you to figure out how God has how stone has become God. You know, if you can't figure out how the lamp is being shown to someone for their approval, if they feel it is worth up to the standard to be offered, or I've brought it for them and they will do the offering, and between offering it to the Lord, you can't tell the difference between that. There's a good chance you're not going to be able to tell the difference between what's stone and what's God either. Like that? Because that's even a, you know. Do we understand? So we have to be very, very careful in these things, that we are trying to understand these very subtle points. It's not that when you pick it up and you show it to the spiritual master, that is worship. No, that is maybe out of respect you're bringing. But it's not worshiping him with that paraphernalia. It's the respect is that you've come to him. It means respect is my mood of coming to him as the person who I can approach the Lord through. Yes.
Maharaj, in that regard, I've seen in temples, when they're supposed to understand that and be showing the paraphernalia, they're also making the circles that they would do within the ija of actually
worship.
Offering and worship. And then it means in all likelihood that they would properly understood.
Yeah. Can do. You can offer the circles, it's not a problem, because it mentions that generally it's less. You'll generally, for the spiritual master, just when showing it, either, you know, once or generally like three times, and then the other ones before. It's just a medium through which, but you won't bother with the numbers and all that. It's just something, because you're doing in circles and this, but its main thing is change that. You know, the motor movements may be similar, but the mentality has to change. But the numbers that you offer, let's say, we'll go to that tomorrow. But when you go through the numbers of times of circles and places and that, that's not at all required. Some temples do like that just to balance out the altars. They have three altars, and one has four deities, one has, you know, two deities, one has this. So they'll have you do different things so that everybody does it at the same time. But that is for that particular temple to establish. But one should understand what is going on. Like that. We'll continue tomorrow. we should end here so we can go for the Julan. You know, so for the next, for this week, then the class will be short, like this. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.